So imagine you have a neighbor who explicitly threatens to tear up the aesthetic of your building.
Right, it sounds like a nightmare.
Oh, it gets worse. He sends these graphic, literal death threats to the property manager, and then when the building finally sues him, he completely ghosts the court hearing.
Just doesn't show up.
Exactly. You would think that scenario results in an automatic slam dunk win for the building, right? Like a judge takes one look at the empty chair, looks at the death threats, and just throws the book at the guy.
I mean, that's what any logical person would assume.
Well, in a 2026 legal ruling out of Western Australia, that exact neighbor actually won.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Today, we are looking at a source that, on its surface, appears to be this really dry, standard bureaucratic property dispute. It's a decision from the State Administrative Tribunal, specifically Wasat 11, for those tracking the documents.
Which doesn't exactly sound like a thriller.
No, it sounds incredibly boring. But hiding inside these pages is this absolute masterclass in how rigid rules completely fail in the modern world.
Okay, let's unpack this. Yeah, so to give some background, this is a case between a lot owner named Michael Leslie Douglas and the strata company of a building named Iquis.
Right. And for our global listeners who might not know, a strata scheme or a strata company is basically the Australian equivalent of an HOA, right? Like a homeowners association or a condo board.
Exactly. It's the legal entity that manages all the shared spaces and the rules of a managed apartment building.
Got it. So our mission for this deep dive is to explore how the literal letter of the law can lead to these incredibly counterintuitive outcomes. Like, we really want to look at why the rules we write for our physical spaces are just struggling and often completely failing to keep up with human behavior.
And it's so relevant because, you know, our behavior has changed so much faster than the law.
Totally. And for you listening, whether you've ever lived in a managed community, dealt with a strict HOA, or honestly, even just signed a standard terms of service contract for your remote job, you are going to want to hear this.
Because it affects pretty much everyone.
Yeah, because this case reveals a massive gaping loophole in the way almost all of our modern community contracts are written.
So to really set the stage here, the Iquis Strata Company applied for legal orders against Mr. Douglas. He owns Lot 42 in the building.
And what does that lot actually include?
It includes an apartment and a share of a balcony up on level 13, plus he's got a storeroom and a car bay down on level 8. And the Strata Company basically wanted the tribunal to issue orders stopping him from doing two things.
Okay, what were they?
First, they wanted to stop him from carrying out these unapproved renovation works on his balcony. And second, they needed to stop him from behaving in this really offensive and intimidating manner toward their third-party strata management company.
Which, I mean, seems entirely reasonable, right? You don't want unauthorized construction compromising the building's integrity, and you definitely don't want residents being abusive to the staff.
Right, it's standard community management stuff.
So the legal gears start turning. There are three directions hearings scheduled to manage the case. And Mr. Douglas's response to these formal legal proceedings is just absolute textbook defiance.
Oh, yeah, he didn't just like forget to put the dates in his calendar. He actively rejected the entire process.
Wow.
The tribunal's files actually show that on December 10th, 2025, Mr. Douglas spoke with officers of the tribunal on two separate occasions.
So he definitely knew about it.
Oh, he acknowledged the proceedings completely. He knew there was a hearing scheduled for the very next day, December 11th, but he just bluntly stated he had absolutely no intention of attending.
Did they offer him like a Zoom link or something?
They did. He refused to attend in person, and he even refused to attend remotely when they offered to set up a digital link. He filed no defense materials. He submitted zero evidence. He just completely abandoned the judicial process.
It's just wild to me because, you know, I always assumed civil court was basically like a forfeit in sports. Like, if the opposing team refuses to take the field, the referee blows the whistle, you win by default, and everyone goes home.
That's a super common misconception, actually.
So why does the tribunal still have to go through all the rigorous legal motions, evaluating all the evidence and reading the files, when the respondent explicitly ignores the whole system? It feels like a high-stakes game of chicken, where one driver doesn't even bother to show up to the road.
What's fascinating here is the underlying philosophy of the burden of proof and why it has to exist even in a default scenario.
Okay, break that down for me.
So under Section 47(1)(b), of the Strata Titles Act 1985 in Western Australia, an applicant can't simply point to an empty chair and demand a penalty. The strata company still legally has to prove their case.
Even if the guy's just blatantly blowing them off.
Exactly. Because if default judgments were automatic just because someone didn't show up, it would create this really terrifying weapon for corporate overreach.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, imagine a well-funded condo board that just wants to bully a low-income resident. They could bury them in frivolous lawsuits, knowing the resident couldn't afford a lawyer or couldn't take time off work to attend the Tuesday morning hearing.
Right, so the automatic forfeit would basically allow the board to bypass justice entirely.
Precisely that. So the tribunal acts as a filter rather than just, a rubber stamp for whoever actually bothered to show up. The tribunal adheres to this very strict standard of fairness.
So the Strata company still had to prove he broke the rules.
Yes. They had to prove a bylaw was actually contravened and that the contravention had serious adverse consequences or that it was breached repeatedly. And because of Douglas's absence, the Strata company told the tribunal in January 2026 that they didn't even need to call live witnesses.
They figured it was open and shut.
Pretty much. They asked the tribunal member, Miss Anne Oldfield, to determine the matter entirely on the documents they had provided in February.
Okay, and to understand why the Strata Company actually lost this seemingly unlosable case, we have to look at their two main complaints separately. Because they fail for very different, very weird legal reasons. Let's start with the physical property itself, the Phantom Balcony renovation.
Right, so this part of the dispute kicks off on November 1st, 2025. Mr. Douglas sends an email to Richardson Strata Management, and he outlines this highly specific, detailed plan to renovate his level 13 balcony.
He wasn't exactly keeping it a secret.
Not at all. He states he's going to tile over the existing floor with wood grain ceramic tile. He plans to tile the rope edge of the coping section. He explicitly mentions that he's going to remove the balustrading if the tiler can't cut around the feet.
Which sounds like a major structural change.
Yeah, and he also plans to install new lights and fix up the surround for the air conditioner.
I read that he even attached images to the email to illustrate his plans. And the crazy thing is, he doesn't wait for a polite approval process. Like, the very next day, November 2nd, he follows up with a written ultimatum.
Oh, yeah, he tells the management company to get back to him ASAP. He says if he hasn't heard back in 7 days, he's just moving forward with the renovations regardless.
And he caps off that email with this now infamous line in this case: "The Council of Owners can mind their own business." And he spelled it incorrectly, of course. MINED. Like a coal mine.
It really sets the tone for his attitude.
So how does the Strata company respond to that?
Well, they reply a month later. On December 1st, they confirm that technically the balcony floor is part of his lot based on the original strata plan, but they draw a very hard line. He has absolutely no approval to do this work.
Because there are rules for this exact scenario,
Right,
right?
exactly. To back this up, they lean on their foundational conduct bylaws. They cite Bylaw 9, which requires a resident to give 14 days' notice for any lot alterations. They cite Bylaw 10, which dictates that the appearance of a lot from the outside cannot be out of keeping with the rest of the building without written consent.
Makes sense. You can't just slap neon pink tiles on the side of a modern high-rise.
Right. And then they throw in bylaw 36.2, which specifically mandates that balconies must be maintained to a uniform and aesthetic standard in conformity with the rest of the Aquas building.
So on paper, it seems like a bulletproof defense by the building. He threatened to change the uniform aesthetic. They pointed to the rule that says you literally can't change the uniform aesthetic, and they explicitly told him no. But here's where it gets really interesting. The tribunal completely dismissed this part of the application.
Yep, the building lost.
The building lost.
Yeah.
And the reason why is just mind-bending to me. They lost because Mr. Douglas hadn't actually laid a single tile yet.
That's right. There was zero evidence submitted to the tribunal that he had actually commenced the proposed works. He had only threatened to do them.
Wait, wait. So you can explicitly threaten in writing to ruin the building's uniform aesthetic. You can tell the legal body to mind their own business, and they can't stop you preemptively based on those bylaws.
It highlights the incredibly strict temporal nature of property law. Section 47(1)(b) of the Strata Titles Act requires an existing contravention to issue the kind of orders the Strata Company was asking for.
So you can't punish a future crime.
Exactly. You have to look at the literal wording of the bylaws they tried to use. Let's take Bylaw 9, which requires 14 days' notice for alterations.
Okay.
Ironically, by sending his aggressive, typo-ridden email on November 1st, Mr. Douglas arguably provided that exact notice. He accidentally complied with the procedural rule by using it as a threat.
That is a brilliant and just infuriating technicality.
Isn't it? And regarding bylaws 10 and 36.2, those rules govern the actual appearance of the building. The whole philosophy of property law is deeply rooted in physical reality. It protects the tangible state of the land.
Because it's about the physical property itself.
Right. And since no wood grain ceramic tiles were laid and no balustrades were removed, the aesthetic of the Equus building hadn't actually been altered. The tribunal noted it wasn't even clear from his conceptual emails if the proposed works would ultimately be visible from the outside.
So this is basically Schrodinger's balcony at this point.
Exactly. Ultimately, you cannot breach a physical aesthetic standard with a hypothetical concept. There is a massive jurisdictional gap in the law between anticipating a rule break and legally penalizing someone for it.
Okay, so the building lost the balcony fight because the physical action hadn't happened yet. It was just a threat, just a concept floating in the air. But that brings us to the second complaint. Because Douglas didn't just deal in threats regarding his balcony, he actually executed a relentless campaign of digital abuse against the staff.
It really did.
So why did the tribunal dismiss that too? How does the law handle an action that is definitively complete but happens entirely in the cloud?
Well, this is where the case moves from a quirky property dispute into something much darker and legally much more complex. Mm-hmm. The Strata Company provided the tribunal with approximately 30 emails and 24 text messages that Mr. Douglas sent directly to Richardson Strata Management. And he was specifically targeting a female employee named Mrs. Nelson.
And just a quick, serious warning for you listening right now. We are going to quote a few short lines directly from the tribunal's official documents, just so we understand exactly what the judge was looking at. The language is extremely graphic, it's misogynistic, and it's violent. We obviously aren't endorsing any of this, but it's crucial to hear the actual evidence to understand the magnitude of this legal loophole.
Yeah, the communications were extraordinarily hostile and crossed well over the line of basic decency. For example, on October 4th, 2025, in an email to Ms. Nelson, he called her slut guts and wrote, "I'm gonna fucking kill Will, you cunt, and bash absolute fuck out of that slut you're with. She's gonna never be the same. I don't give a fuck. Who sees it, you're fucked."
Wow. It is objectively horrific.
It really is.
And it wasn't an isolated incident either. Like on October 19th, he emailed her again saying, "I'm not fucking sorry about the rude messages," and called her fucking disgusting, spelled with a C. And then in late November, he sent a text message to the management company's mobile number saying, "There was no fucking leak, was there, cunt? Like, there wasn't at my storeroom, cunt."
The tribunal member, Mrs. N. Oldfield, reviewed all these messages and formally stated in her decision that she was satisfied the language was offensive and abusive. There was no debate about the nature of the words or the intent behind them.
So the judge agrees it's terrible.
Yes, the tribunal recognized the hostility completely.
Okay, so it is definitively abusive. The action is complete, the receipts are printed and handed to the judge. Yet, the claim was dismissed. The Strata Company lost again, and Douglas faced absolutely zero consequences from the tribunal for this behavior.
It's staggering.
To understand how the system completely breaks down here, we need to group the bylaws the building tried to use into concepts. Because they basically tried three avenues, right? Behavior, hearing distance, and interference. Let's look at the first one. Behavior.
Okay, so the building cited conduct bylaw 4. This rule states a proprietor must not behave in a manner likely to cause offense to the proprietor, occupier, or other resident of another lot, or to any person lawfully on the common property.
Which sounds like it should cover sending death threats.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
But the tribunal noted two massive geographical problems with applying this rule. First, the strata manager received these emails and texts off-site in her own office. She was not an owner, she wasn't an occupier, and she wasn't physically standing on the common property when the abuse occurred.
So the law essentially says she was standing outside the protective bubble of the building's rules.
Exactly. And furthermore, the tribunal engaged in this really fascinating legal debate over the word behave. Yeah. In the context of historical property bylaws, behavior usually implies a physical action occurring in a physical space, like throwing trash in the hallway or playing loud music.
Right.
The tribunal formally questioned whether hitting send on an email from a smartphone even counts as behavior under a framework that was designed purely to manage physical land.
It's like having a rule against running by the community pool and someone drives a car into the lobby. Like, it is objectively worse, but technically they aren't running by the pool.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, so then the building tried the second concept, hearing distance. They used bylaw 35.7, which prohibits abusive language.
But again, look at the strict wording of that rule. That bylaw specifically prohibits swearing or using indecent language in the common property or in the hearing of persons on the common property.
Oh no, don't tell me.
Yep, the tribunal ruled that emails and text messages are silent.
You've got to be kidding me.
They have no physical sound, they were not spoken on the premises, and nobody's physical eardrums were assaulted while standing in the Equus lobby. Therefore, no breach of the bylaw.
That is just. Wow. Finally, they tried the concept of interference, right? They cited bylaw 35.8B, which prohibits interfering with employees or contractors of the strata company. Surely a death threat is interference.
And once again, the tribunal read this in a strictly physical context. Sending malicious texts to an offsite manager did not physically prevent that manager from performing her job duties at the Equus building.
Because she could technically still do her paperwork.
Exactly. The phrasing, interfering with any person, suggests a physical blockade or a tangible disruption of duties, not emotional distress caused via cyberspace.
It's basically like trying to enforce maritime law on a commercial airplane.
Okay.
The rules of the ocean are incredibly strict. They have centuries of precedent, and they work perfectly when you are on a boat. But the second you leave the water and fly at 30,000 feet, those maritime rules literally have zero jurisdiction.
That's spot on.
The foundational strata laws are the ocean, deeply tied to the physical earth. And Douglas's text messages were just flying right over them in the cloud. It's a fascinating disconnect. We have this ultra-modern digital reality being filtered through an incredibly rigid, physical, legal sieve.
This raises an important question about the legacy of our legal frameworks. You have to remember that property laws, especially these foundational strata titles, trace their philosophical roots back centuries to the concept of quiet enjoyment of land.
Right, land being the operative word.
Exactly. They are entirely focused on physical geography, common property, hearing distance, appearance from the outside. Everything is anchored to physical space because until about 25 years ago, that was the only way a neighbor could truly bother you.
That makes total sense. If someone wanted to harass the building manager in 1995, they had to walk down to the lobby and yell at them in person, which would immediately trigger the bylaw about offensive behavior on common property.
The laws are brilliantly designed to govern what happens on the concrete and in the hallways. But when abuse happens via a fiber optic cable directed at a third-party contractor sitting miles away in a different office, it falls completely outside the jurisdiction of a physically oriented legal framework.
Because it's happening in the ether.
Right. The tribunal member couldn't penalize digital text messages using a rule that was explicitly designed to stop people from shouting in the courtyard.
So what does this all mean? For you listening, this isn't just a quirky story about an angry guy in Australia. Think about the rules governing your own life right now. Think about your employment contract, especially if you work remotely. Think about your own HOA agreement or the terms of service on the digital platforms you use.
It really makes you evaluate the fine print.
Exactly. Does this mean bad actors can just game the system if they read the rules closely enough? If you just step one inch outside the physical boundaries defined in those legacy contracts, are we all just completely vulnerable to this loophole?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it reveals a hard, often uncomfortable truth about our justice system. The law relies on absolute precision, not just general vibes of right and wrong.
Which is frustrating when the right and wrong seems so obvious.
Oh, absolutely. When you hear the details of this case, it feels deeply unsatisfying. It feels like a massive loss for common decency that someone can send graphic death threats and face absolutely no consequences from their community board.
Totally.
But the tribunal acting this way, refusing to punish Douglas under rules that didn't technically apply, is actually a vital feature of a free society.
Because if we allow judges to rule based on what they think the rule should mean, the system collapses into judicial overreach.
Exactly. The law has to mean exactly what it says on the page. Tribunals and courts cannot simply invent new rules or stretch old ones just because a respondent is acting terribly.
Even if he is the worst neighbor ever.
Right. If a judge could say, well, the rule says no shouting in the hallway, but sending a hostile text is basically the emotional equivalent of shouting, so I find you guilty, where does that end?
I see. Suddenly, a noise ordinance can be used to penalize someone for writing a strongly worded email.
Yes. It completely destroys the predictability of the law.
So the burden of fixing this loophole doesn't fall on the judge to creatively interpret the rules. it falls on us to write better ones.
The burden falls squarely on the communities, the HOA boards, and the corporations. If you are a strata company today, or any organization managing a community, you have to audit and update your bylaws to explicitly include digital harassment.
You can't just rely on the 1980s boilerplate language anymore.
No, you need rules that protect off-site, third-party contractors, not just physical residents. You need rules that explicitly allow for preemptive legal injunctions against unapproved construction based on written intent, rather than waiting for the hammer to swing. The rules have to evolve because human behavior already has.
And since the EcoStrata company didn't have those modernized rules, their application was completely dismissed. Mr. Douglas didn't even bother to show up, and he still technically won based purely on the inadequacy of the building's own documents.
It's a tough lesson for them.
Very tough. The Strata company was left to figure out their own legal costs, which the tribunal noted they could pursue in a different venue at a later date if they wished, like civil court. But in this venue, under these specific Strata rules, a total dismissal. A complete failure of old rules to capture new problems.
It's a stark reminder that your rights and your protections against bad neighbors or bad coworkers are only as strong as the specific literal words written on the page.
So, to briefly recap the journey we've been on today, we started with a completely defiant lot owner who ghosted the legal system but was protected by the heavy burden of proof. We explored a phantom balcony renovation that couldn't be legally stopped because property law struggles to penalize a threat before it becomes a physical reality. And we examined a barrage of horrific digital texts that somehow didn't violate community rules.
Yeah.
Purely because those legacy rules were permanently anchored to the physical concrete of the building.
It is a jurisdictional gap that bad actors will continue to exploit until the ink of our contracts finally catches up with the reality of the internet.
Which leaves us with a final lingering thought for you to ponder on your own. If our physical communities, our apartment buildings, our neighborhoods, our remote workplaces are increasingly managed through digital communication like emails, texts, and online portals, but our foundational rules only govern what happens in physical space, where exactly does our accountability live now?
That's the big question.
Are we all essentially living in two completely different domains, governed by rules that only understand how to police one of them? I highly recommend you check your own community guidelines today. Look for the word premises and ask yourself what happens when the conflict leaves the building. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We always love finding those hidden aha moments in the densest of sources, taking what looks like boring stereo instructions and uncovering the absolute train wreck underneath. We will catch you next time.